They help you discover your many layers. You peel, you cry, you wake up, refresh eyes. Question life, question humanity, question society, but most of all, question yourself.
My name is Karina Shikakwami. I am a performer and social change maker. I work a lot with folks who are deploying innovations in a lot of different fields, and I borrow a lot from what I've learned as a musician and as a performer, mainly singing and tap dancing in the jazz field, but I span samba, funk, and soul. Originally from the US, my father is Ghanaian, my mom is American, and grew up in New Jersey in a really eclectic mix, extremely diverse, people from all over the planet. And whilst being in this sort of, you know, melting pot of cultures and peoples, my home where I grew up was also, you know, we say the merging of cultures at the dinner table. My mother's family, extremely musical. My grandfather played piano and accordion. And during the holiday period, especially, we would always have, you know, lots of kids running around playing musical chairs. And, you know, it's funny because like 15 years, about 10 years living overseas, I look back and a lot of the music that was played in my grandparents' house was very much the music I play now in terms of jazz. But at my parents' house, you know, more Ghanaian and a crazy mix of, you know, music from their era, from the 70s and 80s, found that, you know, that mix of Ghanaian culture was also very, very much there. So yeah, I'd like to just open that with sort of the dinner table being where a lot of our mix took place. And I guess I didn't have to add as well, my father is an engineer, my mom is a nurse. So I always think about social change, you know, with practitioners at the forefront, like the folks who are delivering on the front lines, building the things that we use every day, taking care of folks day in and day out, and how do we actually use what we have from the arts and different disciplines to make their job easier. So if it means communicating things in a different way, that's what I want to be a part of. If it means changing the way we think about things or bringing more people to the table, and I do see music and the arts as a way of cultivating that. So yeah, that's a snapshot, and I'll definitely be sharing more throughout this time.
It's really great that you mentioned that, because this is something that I'm kind of also researching, you know, how can artists, how can the arts exit just the art scene and the art space to be more relevant in so many different ways, especially in being, I guess, sort of like an instrument or a vehicle or a tool for social change. And I wonder, like, what has your learning been in this space?
Well, I think the arts have always been relevant. I think there's two main things I wanted to share. The arts have always been an act of bearing witness to what our experience is. And I take that from the words of Toni Morrison, great writer, phenomenal writer, transformative writer, who wrote that the role of the arts is to bear witness to human struggle. And struggle, actually, I think in the Latin, actually means to strive. So it's not always to bear witness to sadness and to those feelings of loss, but it also means, as we strive to build and make a better world. Artists have always been there and are bearing witness to that through their writing, through their performing, through telling stories. I also think, and wanted to share, the arts as a forum for conversation. So whether you're playing solo or delivering a piece of work for a wider audience, the idea of having conversation and for creating a space where conversation can occur. Our artists, again, have been doing this for a long time. And I don't want to see the arts put in a box for a functional tool for social change. I think if you look at the great movements of our human history, the role of the arts has always gone in lockstep. So whether it was the civil rights movement of the 60s and the music of that period, you know, with looking back to a shared history and also looking forward at what we can build. So yeah, I think if I see the arts as a vehicle or as a means of having conversation. It also is to bear witness to that. And I wouldn't want to say that, you know, the job description of an artist in social change is X. But I think in the different ways that artists already work and already transform, that is, you know, those are two things to bear in mind.
I wonder if conversations are enough, because I come from like theater background, and I was doing a lot of social political works in theater spaces, performing spaces, and also like in film. And then I realized people who come to watch these shows and people who come to exhibitions are, you know, the same intellectual artistic groups. And then I just found myself in this position where I wonder if conversations are enough when so many people are shouting on the streets, so many people are shouting on the internet, but what are the actions? What are the actions that actually come out of it? What is it that we are actually doing beyond just speaking about it? Because at some point, to a certain degree, conversations are important. And then at some point onwards, you know, there's that big difference between conversation, knowledge, and action that is going to make a difference. Mm. And I feel like in a time like now where we're in a climate crisis and we've been talking about this issue for ages, like generations, and it's still, you know, where is the action? We are in an emergency. And then I'm reflecting on my role in this world, like me as an artist or me as an individual with all the things that I care about, all of the things that I want to try and change, or all the things that I want to do, all the things that I want to highlight, to bring justice or equality or to heal. And I found myself, you know, in position in this large system that we are in, where is my place? Because I don't have the knowledge of like a financial person who understands how the economy works and like, you know, please explain to me, why is it that we're not exiting this system that is broken? And then I am not like a scientist who understands, say, the actual impact on and implications on the entire of our planet and in terms of sort of the climate crisis. And, you know, I found myself like in a position where it feels like if I want to understand how social change can happen, I exited my research in the arts and I was just going to so many different fields. And at some point I'm like, wait a minute, am I going to be able to understand everything? Is this my place, my position to understand everything? Like, what is it that I can do in the role that I play, what I do best, making films, making, telling stories or making theater or, you know, collaborating with people? Like, what is it that I can contribute best in, you know, in this moment in time where what we need is social movement and what we need is collaboration and solidarity to move towards and sort of purpose-driven action. Mm. I guess that's where I'm getting at.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things you shared, and I really jumped on the words talking and speaking. And the fact that there is a lot of talking and speaking, shouting and crying, perhaps. And I think for conversations, that's the first part. That is the call. But I think in this period, truly actively listening is the part of a conversation that gets left out. And I think that is the part where, whether it's artists or folks like yourselves, you are an artist, absolutely. In the visual arts and video, perhaps even theater, I think prompting folks to listen to a point where they might be changed by what they hear, because it's all well and good to have lots of people talking, but talking doesn't equal conversation. You know, speaking doesn't equal dialogue. And that's something I've been learning a lot working with Heather Cornell, who is a incredible tap dancer, oral historian, who's been really bringing together communities of tap dancers all over the world to study the work of Eddie Brown. Eddie Brown, folks may not know, is one of the sort of fathers of bebop and rhythm tap, really bringing in the phrasing from that musical genre and translating it into how you improvise. And one thing that she's been raising a lot with all of us who, if it wasn't COVID, would have been spending a good portion of August working through his work. But instead, since March, we've been gathering in, you know, groups of five and six over Zoom boxes once a week, to work through bits and pieces of his choruses. And the BS chorus is one of his that he wanted all rhythm tap dancers to learn. But her point is, you know, improvisation is being changed by what you hear. So being able to respond to something you actively hear and listen, and allowing yourself to be changed. And that only happens when you really listen. And whether that means listening to the rhythms, because the technique to actually dance it may not yet be there, but you're listening to the taps, and the music behind it, taking a pause to really only do one chunk at a time. In a time where, whether it's in music or in science or in arts, there is this pressure to try to understand everything. And actually that pressure, that angst, actually keeps us from listening. And so I think for me, it's very much, you know, how can artists prompt pauses for us to actively listen and really put our first inclination to respond by speaking aside for a second. I also think that, you know, with the great crises we have at the moment, there is this pressure to erase everything, start over, and to change that way. And even with that in mind, we need massive change, full stop. However, those 1% changes, you know, that an artist takes every day when they practice, and just becoming a little bit better at your time or a little bit better with your melody, that is something also I think artists can offer, that, you know, massive change over time is actually an aggregate of small changes every day. And a musician can tell you this, that you might learn something great. We might be the one prodigy who can turn over a brand new trick or a trade, but actually almost all musicians, even especially the great ones, have, you know, a myriad of 1% changes that they've brought into their practice every day. And sort of that mountain of change is, you know, made up of these. So whilst it is the time, you know, the essence for massive change, I think if we can create spaces where improvisation, literally being changed by what you hear, can occur, and really look at those 1% changes that we can all contribute to. I'd actually be quite happy with that. I think that in and of itself is a mammoth task. and especially, you know, just say, bringing a little bit of my family background and just sort of having diversity at the table all the time, it really showed me that even, you know, everyone making small 1% changes is actually quite a lot, to even get to the point where you can have a conversation. So I don't want to underestimate that in a time when, yes, you know, we want to see massive change.
Is this something that has sort of like informed you or brought you through the Wayfinder process?
Absolutely. And I guess for everyone out there, the Wayfinder and the Artist Composer Residence was a really beautiful opportunity in 2020 to bring together artists, composers from all different fields. And when we started this conversation, you know, in September, October, not really knowing who would be involved and how it would shape up, again, we all had to come to a place where we convene and really listen to what each other have to offer. And actually, in those first couple weeks, if folks, you know, the artist-composer period was about a month. And actually in those first weeks, you get really, really excited. You're hearing loads of different stuff. It's like, yeah, we could do this, we could do that. We could go this way, we could go that way. It could be more individual, it could be a group. And actually had to go through a period of several conversations, you know, even to get to the point where now we can do something actively together. And it's, that process was very organic. It was not linear. Had this meeting and we decided this, we had this meeting, and then we took these next steps. But it was actually a series of many conversations, you know, as a full group and in, you know, pairs and trios, and also sort of situating one's individual work, you know, and what it could offer and how it could be informed by the group. And for me, it was also on an individual journey, you know, taking the massive pieces of work of Eddie Brown that I'd been studying, and actually getting to the simplest thing of it, which might be just a walking step, or as a singer working through really, really complicated jazz chords and voicings and trying to figure out which sounds better, and then just stripping that back to the most simple melody. And doing that, trying to make it simple was an act of, I want to share this with the group in a way that, invites conversation, invites a response. So as somebody who is always wrestling with complexity and thinking about how do we sort of map the system, or how do we actually tell the story, the process of the residency was really good in saying, actually, we have a lot already, that we can cull from. How do we actually create places where that listening can take place in the simplest way? So I think on the sort of artist journey front, that's how I saw it. I also felt that in this period of, end of summer and really thinking about winter and what that looks like in a COVID scenario, the Wayfinder residency was really exciting to have a community of people all over the world and to do that together in a time where we're actually spending a lot more time alone. And I look back on some of the earlier movements of the Wayfinder where, these dine arounds held all over around the globe brought up themes where, people shared this fear of losing the ability to truly learn together. And what does that learning look like when we're not in a community, when we're not together? So this Wayfinder movement for the artist composers was also a response to that. How do you actually cultivate an experiment? And so those things are still in progress. I think we're still learning more about each other every day.
Why did you specifically choose Eddie Brown in response to sort of the, task that we were given? Because we were tasked to respond to the responses that they had collected in the Wayfinder project, which a lot of it was, this response to chaos, this response to the pandemic. And then what was that link with Eddie Brown?
Yeah, so I guess with Heather Cornell's Tap Labs, I'd been completely immersed in Eddie Brown's stuff since March, having been a very new tap dancer. If I compare myself with my peers, I came to tap and sort of rhythm tap as a singer, as somebody who would spend lots of time at jam sessions. And when I wasn't singing, would be, in the corner waiting my turn and just fiddling with my feet. So I came to tap, it's probably now about 18 months. And Eddie Brown for me was someone you could think of as a composer and a musician himself, and absolutely somebody who you could hear and sing the rhythms he was tapping. And so having been immersed in all of that basically for the whole pandemic, it's become a real part of just my learning practice. And again, this point about I wasn't the best dancer and definitely wasn't the best at learning choreographies quickly. So in starting that process in March, really had to step back. There were sessions I would just listen and sing the rhythms. And I think for the Wayfinder, I found it quite similar in the beginning, just having to listen and read, responses that the other movements of the Wayfinder dine arounds had shared. And there were lots of themes, things like responding to chaos, which you mentioned, this learning, losing the ability to learn together really jumped out at me. Because when we learn in our little Zoom boxes, we don't necessarily have the dialogue piece. There's also this a bit around care capsules and how, people around us, the relationships actually force us to reinvent what care means for one another. And again, I found the work of Eddie Brown, and particularly learning it in community with not just Heather, but tap dancers literally all over the world, was something I found really a close parallel to what the Wayfinder was doing with people across the social change space. So it was a prompt more than anything. I think looking back in order to look forward is part of being human. I think as a Ghanaian, we have a term called Sankofa, Sankofa, which literally means to go back and fetch it. And like going back to your roots or past experiences, was part of my practice in terms of now thinking going forward. So I wouldn't say that it's completely out of left field, but I found Eddie Brown's sort of starting point for communities coming together, in my case around tap, was really a similarity that I almost couldn't ignore. And as someone who tries to bring together, you know, these different art forms in dialogue, as they have so much in common, felt that that was a great opportunity to do so.
I have to mention, there is this part in my short film with you tap dancing with that iPad on the ground. And and when that snippet, that video snippet found its way into the film, everything made sense. Like, it was just like, it wasn't just about like the film that I was composing and constructing. It was just how everyone's pieces and everyone's sort of recording what they were saying, and the sounds just sort of, they found its own place within the film that I made. And that was so beautiful for me at the end of it, because I knew when I saw it that, you know, I think some things are missing. And then as more pieces came in, they found its way in. And at some point I was like, this is it. I think this is it. Like, that's the film done. And it was such a, beautiful moment. Yeah. And it was such a beautiful moment because it wasn't something that I solely created myself. Like, it was very much the images, the sounds, the voices that played its through it and found its part, even though I was kind of, I guess, orchestrating it to a certain degree. But it was really sort of a holistic effort. I wonder if you can share a little something of what you made, just so that audience can have a bit of context.
Absolutely. I think since we've been talking so much about Eddie Brown, I probably should tap a little bit so you can just get a snippet. Again, this is definitely borrowed from Eddie. So this is his BS chorus, which I'll share a little bit. And then I think for what we did together as a group piece, as of the Wayfinder, I stripped it back completely to just basic, you know, walking. And what does that feel like, either in a pandemic or being at home alone or really wanting to run? So I'll do a little bit of Eddie Brown, have a little bit of a pause, and then just share with you some different kinds of walking.
So you might have bits of this already, but BS chorus. That's the first movement, I would say, of the BS chorus. And it's really interesting because I spent in March about 3 to 4 months just getting the first steps. You know, this language of shut, boom, boom. Like, that now sits really well, having learned the language of Eddie Brown. And there's a lot of little bits of language that he uses, this sort of shit. And you see that all over, you know, or yeah, like that sort of repeated thing. And it's interesting because, again, as a newer dancer, I found just being able to sing that shaka boom. Once I got the language, then the steps followed later. And now, in doing another piece of his called Paris, it's not even just the speed, of it taking up. It's more when I hear a piece of his, I'm like, oh, I know that that's definitely him. That's his sort of rhythm. But I did mention that as we came together in the Wayfinder, you know, I put some of the Eddie stuff just aside and found, you know, some of the themes we were talking about, like just going for a walk on your own. A lot of those just came naturally, in a sense, really, really simple, but again, still influenced by Eddie. So things like, just that sort of, you know, really, really simple. How do you take these sort of complex things that you mull over and practice and practice and practice, and then actually strip it back to the most simple thing, like walking? And in dialogue with our other Wayfinder artist composers, little bits just started to come up. And it's not so much about what I want to say, it's more, how does this whole thing fit and make sense as a collective community? So for me, it was interesting because I always found tap dancing really daunting. You go to an event and watch people and you're just in so much awe. But actually the things you really remember and think about, you know, down the road are when you see those different bits come together. And so when I see tap dancers play with musicians or play with theater, or in your case, like seeing all these different bits sort of, you know, those 1% sort of in a bigger group piece, it actually takes the daunting part of it all out of the equation, because you're actually there to see how your bits respond or are in dialogue with the others, as opposed to wearing and carrying the weight of the artist on your shoulders. So that's something I've really learned from this process, is really, you know, letting and responding to others, and in the pandemic case, people you've never met in person. So that's also been, that's been the biggest lesson, is we can do it. It's obviously not the same as playing live and meeting each other and vibing in that way, but we've definitely found, you know, other ways as humans to adapt. And hopefully this won't be a permanent adaptation, but at least showing us it's possible.
I have to say, I really love your expression when you tap dance, because you just look like you're fully enjoying it and you're just fully present, which was so beautiful.
Oh, I love it. And it's, I'm present because I'm loving it. I'm also present because I'm like, what's this? Nah, it's definitely, it's something that, you know, as a singer as well, it's really forced my timing. Not forced, it's made me way more attentive. In a way that, again, in being really simple, you can strip back things to, you know, the basics. And if you can do the basics, and if you can, if you have great timing, you can get away with murder, really. So it is really fun. And the timing part really helps, obviously working remotely and working with different people.
Would you like to play something on a piano as well?
Oh, sure. I was going to play you some jazz tunes, but I think something really simple. Again, I feel like by this pandemic, I've just been really connecting and linking back to people who inspired me, people I've worked with, people I've studied. And I had the pleasure of going to a workshop well before the pandemic, with Leanne Carroll, and who's a fantastic piano singer, and Sarah Coleman. And I've continued to work with Sarah Coleman as a student. She's held these, you know, gatherings weekly for us to warm up, literally the warm-up room. And we learned this piece, and it's so simple. And yet I've been singing it and humming it all day. So I just really wanted to share that with you. It's You've Got to Get Up Every Morning. It's a Carole King tune. So absolutely, definitely credits to Carole King. But it's really just been a mantra, and I definitely wanted to share that with you. I wouldn't call it jazz per se, but it's all jazz, to be honest. So this is, you've got to get up every morning. Beautiful. You've got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart. Then people gonna treat you better. You're gonna find, yes, you will, 'cause you're beautiful as you feel. Waiting at the station with the workday window blowing, I've got nothing to do but watch the passersby. Mirrored in the faces, I see frustration growing, and they don't seem to show it. Why do I? Got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart. Then people gonna treat you better. You're gonna find, yes, you will, 'cause you're beautiful as you feel. I have often asked myself the reason for the sadness in the world when tears are just a lullaby. If there's any answers, maybe love can end madness, maybe not, but we can only try. You've got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart. Then people gonna treat you better. You're gonna find, yes, you will, 'cause you're beautiful as you feel. 'Cause you're beautiful as you feel. 'Cause you're beautiful as you feel. Yeah, I've just been mulling that over and over and over again.
It's such a beautiful song. Also, when you when you sent it on the group chat, I was feeling super exhausted. And then I heard it and I was like, oh wow, this hit home.
Gosh. And I really encourage, you know, everyone, any genre really, to tuck into Carole King's writing. I think as a songwriter, and the words are, you know, you definitely get those moments where you stop and rewind things. Like, really, did she just say that? That's exactly how I'm feeling. Yeah, the feeling is mutual at the moment.
I wonder, in a world of sort of like, I guess, chaos right now, and everyone, I guess, plunge into this unknown, yet also kind of really busy in a different way. Like, is it, when we're all lost in this sea, I wonder if one of the power of or the roles of the arts is to, it's to just emotionally connect, you know, that, hey, you're not alone. We're all out here in the same pool swimming around. Yeah. I wonder if there's also that.
Ah, yeah, no, definitely. And I think the opportunities to create something new or look at things with new eyes, I found that's my biggest lesson this year, is that, you know, you either are inspired to make something new so you can interact and share with others, or again, going back and fetching it, you know, looking back to things you've learned before, people who've touched you, and sort of revisit them in another way. And I think though either of those actually are ways that we can bring, you know, new dreams to life. And you know, whether it was the Wayfinder and the communities that it has brought together, you know, those are creating new things and new connections. And also really drawing on things that as humans we thrive on, you know, bringing people together over a meal in person or a meal virtually, you know, it's revisiting something that humans we've done for millennia. And so really reaching into that piece, you know, is a universal thing. And I find music as well, another in all its forms, whether it's, you know, the most basic sort of walking pattern, walking baseline, or a full scale symphony. Like, it's also drawing on those things that as humans we've done for a long period of time. So yeah, I totally feel that. And I think if we can get and draw on those pieces to imagine a better world and help us dream ways we can, you know, bring it to fruition. Yeah, that would be good enough. I wouldn't say good enough is settling, but that would be a mammoth task.
I've been I'm currently reading Charles Eisenstein's Sacred Economics, and he mentioned in this part where. So we live in this sort of like interest-based money system, which isn't working. It's not down to any individual, any rich person, but just because the money system is just not working and we're not breaking out of it because it's just running on its own. And when you've got interest, it means that you have to keep on growing, because with interest, it doesn't matter if there's money or not. I'm going to create it with interest. So that means that, say he's the example that he gave was that, so this... In this village where everyone's got their own like little chicken farms, for example, you have X amount of chicken, and then they're just, you know, bartering with each other and they're trading and they're like going through the really long process of trying to exchange products to find the right value. And then this person comes in with these like leather, circular leather notes, and he's like, you know, I'm going to make your life easier. So I'm going to give this to you. I'm going to give you 10 leather rounds. And after 1 year, I expect you to give me 11 letter rounds in return, or like one extra letter round in return. So that means that he's creating essentially an artificial sense of like an extra value. So for that village to be able to give anything more, they will have to take a cut from themselves, basically. So that's kind of like where we are right now, where this growth, this economic growth, it only makes sense, and we can only fully enjoy it if there are enough to exploit for us to continue growing. But the fact is that we have scarce, limited resources. So this means that all of our dreams, right, all of that will be exploited. Even like culture, anything that is intangible will need to find a way to find a material sense for it to be exploited, so that it can find its way into the GDP, it can find its way into this economic system to be registered as a thing and a value. A financial value. And then I've just really been reflecting on what does this mean for dreams, you know, when even something like community, even something like empathy have now become like marketing techniques, right? And what does it mean moving forward when every single relationship that you have out there is almost like people expect there to be a financial transaction at the end of it. Like there isn't something where it's just a gift anymore. It's almost like, you know, you know, at the end of it, people are asking for something else. And I find that really disturbing, especially, I mean, I was in a completely different space in the social sector. And then now moving back to Singapore, and it's just, you know, business. And I find it really difficult to live in a world like this where it's not about whether I truly believe in this and I want to give this because I want to raise awareness about it. It's, you know, what can I get out of this? How can I build like reputation, or how can this help my branding? And it just feels like so many of these conversations become a negotiation and a transaction, which really doesn't sit well with me. And I guess I'm also like, you know, left brain, right brain. I'm just this sort of like fantasy driven, imaginative person. And this logical side of me is just like, it doesn't make sense, you know, like, yeah, sure, money, but what? And what do we mean when we talk about dreams now? When the people who dream, the young people who dream, they can't afford these dreams because how, like, this financial system doesn't reward things like ecological care or social care or like even creativity, you know, unless you can commodify it. And where we talk about, you know, like youths just go and dream a better world, what kind of world are we creating such that they can actually allow their dreams to come true? That's my question.
Wow. I'm just going to let a pause. No, I mean, seriously, this is, I don't know if this is a dialogue thing. Again, letting that sink in is an act of not just listening, but surrender. And I don't think surrender means defeat, though it feels like it at times when you try to imagine how the system is, you know, how it's designed, you know, how it's set up, and who it rewards and who it exploits. I don't think it's the burden of the arts to take all the work of that, of undoing that. You know, but I think if you look at narrative change as an ocean, this is a term brought up by Pop Culture Collab, if you think, a metaphor in terms of, if you think about the ocean as like all the stories in the world, you know, and the dominant stories are the waves, you know, the ones that are pushing and shaking and moving. And we can't just have one story to change that. But if we populate or fill the ocean with different stories, it might begin to create new waves. And we've seen that. I mean, I think globally, you know, no one thought, you know, the slavery would end probably in the 16th, 1700s. You know, this was just such a part of how things functioned around, in, particularly in the Americas. But that's just one example. And I wouldn't say it was a few, but it was, you know, all those 1% over time. And, you know, still with resistance and still with a system that to this day, you know, is still built on those foundations. I think, you know, principles of diversity and that being a part of how groups, companies, organizations are actively confronting, you know, what their organizations look like. And yes, even that to an extent is being commodified, but I think it's that beginning to populate, you know, the ocean with different stories is one way that we can start to reshape this. I really like the work of Mariana Mazzucato, The Value of Everything. And she describes exactly what you shared, thinking about the financial system and how that was all, you know, contrived but built upon narratives over centuries of how an economic model should work. So the point is, it doesn't have to, we shouldn't be taking it as given. You know, it is this way, but there were choices that have been made over time to get us to that point. And actually dismantling it is also possible, hopefully rebuilt in a better way. And I guess one more point, and this is definitely Mariana Mazzucato's point, is it's more about the direction of travel. At this point, the direction of travel is, as you said, it's not there to fulfill and allow people to live these dreams. So maybe either we need new dreams or we need to think about the direction of travel. And I think some countries, some cities are taking really bold approaches. I know that Amsterdam has adopted the donut economics model for how a city can operate. So it's not completely getting rid of the notion of cities and economics, but it is thinking about a new direction. And that is very exciting. I think that is, you know, something that should give us all a bit of faith. I think the pandemic has shown nations, you know, how to hold companies and organizations accountable if they're going to be receiving public funds. So in Copenhagen, in Denmark and in France, it's actually very, very strict now if you receive government funds. In the aviation sector, that means you have to take on more measures to reduce your carbon emissions over time. It also means that you can't get tax breaks if you haven't complied to a number of conditions. So I think, again, the direction of travel is shifting in some places. I think it's exciting to see what can happen going forward.
So, well, since we're running out of time, right, like one question to sort of round it off, what is one thing that you do to create change in this world?
I think truly listening. Music with, you know, no multitasking. not reading, not on your phone. I also think, you know, active listening doesn't mean you don't speak. It means that you are able to receive what's said, let it sink in, and then respond. And in that response, you're not as concerned or listening to yourself speak, but really letting, you know, your heart respond. And that's something I think if you're speaking in a group or giving a speech of some sort, when you can do that, you can speak more freely from the heart. And I think that is the starting point for those conversations that can prompt improvisation, that can prompt reflection, and can prompt those 1% changes that as a whole human family, can bring those changes to life. So I think that's where I would share to everybody. But I guess on that note, I did want to share a tune, if that's all right.
Sure, go for it.
If we have time.
Yeah, we do.
Because I think, I mean, the weight of all these systems is quite hefty. And I, again, going back to sort of basics of what we can do in our day-to-day, I'm really moved to share this song by Victor Young. It's called Weaver of Dreams.
This is Weaver of Dreams. Oh, a weaver of dreams, you and that strange fascination. Weaver of dreams, you and that come hither smile, just to hear you speak, can make me weak as a babe in arms, poor little babe in arms, helpless before your jaws.
Deep.
a weaver of dreams, and I'm in love with you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. If people want to find out more about your work, where can they go and find it?
Oh, absolutely. KarinaKwamy.com. Check us out there. And yeah, we have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It's also Karina Kwamy. So do check us out. This has been fab.
Hello, Onions Talk listeners. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, it would really help if you can leave a review on iTunes or like us on Facebook. Otherwise, subscribe and share it with people whom you think will enjoy this. Special thanks to Andrea for the music. Catch you next episode.